Tonight we are on how it works in the big book. We have three meetings. We have a new, Amanda's new tonight, and we have a site, experiencethebigbook.org, where you can, there's 77 thoughts on recovery, and we have 350 podcasts, and the whole book is on there, and all sorts of, carry this message, 12 and 12, and steps we took. History of AA, the manuscript, how the book was written, all sorts of stuff, if you're interested. tonight we're on How It Works, Chapter 5. I call it the How It Works preamble, the first three pages, 58 to 60, that are read at every meeting. I think they're read, and after a while you hear something all the time, and you sometimes lose the significance of the power of it. These three pages have changed the world. We covered page 58 last week, and I put it up on the site just today, so if you want to listen to it, if you weren't here. Tonight we're on page 59. I've been thinking about what to do, and I think I'm going to do a short review of the 12 steps as I see them today, and how I see them from the book, if that's okay. Is that all right? Nobody said yes, so nobody said no. We're going to review, though, for Jimmy, with remember that we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. Anybody agree with that? And alcohol is cunning, baffling, powerful in our mind. It's a liquid in a bottle, for God's sakes. But it's going to do something for us that we think we need. And when we think we need it, we have no way to say no to it. Anybody had that problem? And it changes the way I feel. So remember, we're dealing with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. And it's cunning, baffling, and powerful for the reason that the power that we need to live our lives, we don't have. So they're going to tell us without help, it is too much for us. Anybody agree with that? How many times have people heard that? What it means is, without help, it is too much for you. Now, a lot of people may not understand that, but without help, it is too much for you. And it has to be perfect help. It can't be your help. It can't be the meeting. It can't be friends. It has to be perfect help, because alcohol is very powerful over our mind. And so they tell us who's going to help us. There is one who has all power. Know this one is with a capital O. That one is God. So God in AA, you can get really confused, and, you know, who should God be, and this and that. Now we have people, I believe in, you know, Christianity, and we have people have their own. But God simply is one who has all power. And that one is God. And if God has all power, and you don't have any power over alcohol, that means you need to find him. So it says, may you find him now. Notice H with a capital H. God, now. Now, that there's two things about that. In the now, right in the moment, is where God is. Now, alcoholics don't live in the moment. Alcoholics live in the past or the future. There's a powerful speaker. You can listen to it, Freedom from Bondage, on XA Speakers, Lynn W. And she said that alcoholics can't live in ongoing time. We live in the past or the future, and we're never in the now. Anybody relate to that? How many of you are sitting here thinking about later tonight or tomorrow or what happened? Yes, we're not in the now. And she says, what we do is we block it out with resentment and fear. Isn't that what we inventory in the fourth step? And we block the now out. So what we learn in AA is how to live in ongoing time. And we take the resentment and fear, we move them away, so we're back in the now. But we don't know how to do that when we get here. So that's why we have to work the steps. The steps tell me how I can move resentment and fear away and be back in the now. He said whenever we're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with us. Right, Russ? Yeah, and what's wrong is we're not in the now. We've decided this is bad, so we're angry, or something bad's going to happen, and we're in the future. And now is where God is. Now, there's also another suggestion here. It's very subtle. Find him right away. Because you're dealing with alcohol. It has, you have no power over it without helping. It's too much for you. Find the help right away. I can't see any place in the big book where it says, take a while to do the steps. Have you heard that? Or you need to clear your mind first. Or you need to, you can't rush it. Don't rush the steps. It's like, you know, don't take the poison right away. Find him now. Now, look what they say next. Half measures availed you nothing. They're giving you a warning here. This is so well written, so powerful. And remember, he wrote this inspired by God one night in 25 minutes. He prayed to God. He didn't know what to write. He picked up the pen. He wrote this. I believe him. I believe his testimony. He doesn't take any credit for putting this together. Half measures availed us nothing. Now, nothing means nothing, by the way. So half steps will do nothing for you. Half God in your life will do nothing for you. So then, have you stood at the turning point? So you're standing at the turning point. You get to page 59. They've spent a lot of time on steps 1 and 2. Understanding what step 1 means for you, is it true for you, and being willing to believe that there's a power that can help you. And now you stand at the turning point. And we all stand here. Am I going to ask his protection and compare with complete abandon? Am I going to turn away from me to God completely? It doesn't say I'm going to give God a little bit more power in my life. It says I'm going to ask his protection and care with complete abandon. Now, complete abandon means complete abandon. These words have powerful meaning. It means you can't hold on to anything, because whatever holding you on to is going to block you from God. So this is really what they're talking about. Are you surrendered? Are you ready? Are you ready to completely abandon yourself to the protection and care of God? Now here's another line that's I don't know if it's misunderstood, but I've heard it misstated. It says, here are the steps we took. This is what they did, which are suggested as your program of recovery. Now they took the your out and they put A. The steps are not suggested. The steps are what they took, and it's their program of recovery. They suggest, if you want a program of recovery, if you want help from God, may you find him now, you work the steps. They're not suggestions. It's not like, jump out of the airplane, maybe you want to have a parachute. No. This is what they did. So if you want what they have, then this is what they did. Now, the other thing that people don't realize about this book is this is a testament. This is a testament about the power of God to change these people's lives and what they did. You don't have to like it. You don't have to agree with it. But if you don't have a plan and your life is hopeless and futile, they suggest you do what they did. Now, whether you do it or not is up to you. And notice it's the steps they took. This is what they did. Now, if you want what they had, this is what they had. Are you willing to go to any length to get it? Then you're ready to take certain steps. Now, we had a brilliant guy here last week. He made a point that it's a 12-step program. It suggested you do the 12 steps. That was Jason. Imagine that. Because he was struggling for several years, and he asked somebody what the problem was. He says, well, it's a 12-step program. We suggest you do the 12 steps if you want the program. We talk a lot about the steps and program. People talk about they're in the program. You can't be in the program. You're in the fellowship. You either do the program or you don't. Are you doing it or not? And so that's misunderstood. And what is a program? It's a plan of action. It's a step-by-step procedure to do something. So if you want what they had, which was recovered, then you're going to do exactly what they say. So I thought that, I was thinking about this, I'm just going to go through these 12 steps quickly. I think I can do it in 15 minutes on how I see them and what the book says about them. If I go 5 minutes longer, nobody's going to yell at me, right? All right, good. It says, we admitted we were I'm nervous. It says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. It doesn't say in step one that you're an alcoholic. Where does it say you're an alcoholic? It says on page 34 something, the first step of recovery is we have to fully concede to our innermost selves that we're an alcoholic. Now, if you're an alcoholic and you understand what that means, then you could admit to yourself, admit into your consciousness that you're powerless over alcohol. It's easy to say I'm powerless over alcohol, but do you understand, admit it into your innermost self that you're powerless over alcohol? Now, why are you powerless over alcohol? Because if you put in your body, you can't control how much you drink. If you're sober and awake and alive, your mind will seek the ease and comfort of alcohol and you can't say no to it. That's a bad situation. So those are the two things that make you powerless over alcohol, but there's one other thing that makes you powerless over alcohol, and that's the hyphen. And people don't realize this, that our lives had become unmanageable. Now I'm going to call New York. They need to add, by me. Now, a lot of people say that their lives have become unmanageable, but it's because of them. Anybody else have that when they come in here? And a long list. That's the executed list. You know, people should be executed. But I made my life unmanageable sober. That's the other thing people confuse. They think their lives are unmanageable because they drink and their lives are a mess, or they use and their lives are a mess. No, that does make your life a mess. But your life is unmanageable sober. And when it's unmanageable sober, because of the spiritual illness we have, the separation from God, our self-centeredness, I don't like the way the world is. I get irritable, restless, and discontent. That's what they say. It means you get pissed off, and you're afraid, and you're angry, and you want to, you know, self-will run riot, and you want the ease and comfort of alcohol or drugs. And so as long as you're managing your life sober, it's never going to work. So that's step one. And it has to be taken 100% all the time. Now, I know some people are taking it 100% today because they're here. You go to a meeting. It means you admit you need help. Did anybody pray this morning? There you go. They need help. The second step is came to believe. They came to believe that a power greater than themselves could restore us to sanity. What in the hell does that mean? It means restore me to my right mind regarding alcohol. I can see alcohol that is just a hot flame. Don't put my finger in there. You can see the truth about alcohol, and you can't drink on the truth. You can only drink on a lie. And so you need a power greater than yourselves to restore us that to me. And also it restores me to sanity regarding everything I thought I knew. All my old ideas, all my resentments, all my fears. I could see the truth about it. So we believe that that can happen. Anybody believe that? Good. Now, believing that can happen should make you change your mind 180% degrees away from you. Because if you're in you, you're powerless over alcohol. You can't manage your life anymore. So does everybody here believe that a power greater than themselves can restore them to sanity? How do you come to believe that? Well, you hear Terry. You hear people who've done the deal. You hear people who tell you what their lives were like and what's happened to them. Then you might ask Terry what she did. And she can show you what she did and how she got to where she is today. And this book is telling you how they were restored to sanity. Now, when do you get restored to sanity? Which page? 84. Oh, no. Oh, my God. 85. We will recoil from a hot flame. We will see the truth about alcohol when you're in the 10th step and you're in the world of the spirit with God. It starts with 84, so Stu gets 10 points. That's the recovered promises. They come true if you've done the works of 1 through 9, and you're living in step 10. If you're not in the world of the spirit, you're in your own little world. You don't have any power over alcohol. So you want to get there quickly. Anybody want to get there quickly? It doesn't take long. Then it says step 3, we make a decision. That's all you do in step 3. You're deciding that your life is unmanageable. Now, step 1 is pages 1 to 43. Page 44 to 57 is step 2. Step 3 starts on page 60. We're going to make a decision to turn my will, my thinking, and my actions over to the care of God as we understood Him. Why do I want to do that? Well, they tell me on 60 to 62 what it looked like running the world. I was in conflict with everybody and everything. They didn't have the script I gave them. I was upset all the time. It triggered all my character defects. I was under the delusion that I could manage. If I just managed well, I could be happy. Anybody else have that? Yeah, that got me a wristband. It's not possible. I can't manage the outside world ever and be happy based on that. I have to be happy on my relationship with God. Happiness is an inside job. Happiness is overrated. I want to be serene. I want to be at peace with God. Happy puts a value on things. So I shouldn't use that word. How can we be at peace? How can we be undisturbed? Now, it says, I must be convinced that a life run on self-will can never be successful. That's what we're going to read on the next page. Now, how are you convinced of that? You look at your life. You look at yourself when you get in here. And it says, can never be successful. And then it says, what's the root of my problem? On page 62, me, self-centeredness, the root of all my problems. I was driven by 100 forms of fear, selfishness, self-pity, dishonesty, self-seeking. I made decisions based on self which caused who harm? Me and everybody I loved. Good job, Michael. Keep working at it. So the big book, now this is not in the big book, and next time we're going to put it in, it says, fire yourself. Fire yourself as manager. You're a losing team, Michael. You never won a game. Fire yourself. Yeah, there you go. Fire yourself, and I can never manage my life. So it says, what's going to kill me? Selfishness. It's going to kill me. People say, oh, yeah. How does selfishness kill you? You get irritable, restless, and discontent. Then the obsession to drink and use comes in. You'll never have any peace. Now, you could try to get less selfish. Anybody try to do that? That's like, you know, that's ridiculous. But we need help. It says God makes it possible. I can't do it without God. So that's why I have to find God now, because if I'm in the now with God, then I'm not selfish. And if I'm not selfish, then I'm not running the show. And then I don't get disturbed. So then it says, what do we need to do in our decision? What is our decision really? That I'm not going to play God anymore. Does anybody know why? It didn't work. Now, it took me a while to figure that out. I knew it didn't work. But I don't know if any of you understand why it didn't work. Because I wasn't God. It took me a while. It sounds ridiculous. But I said, yeah, you know, I'm not God. And if I play God, it's never going to work. It sounds so ridiculous. But we have really screwy thinking. And then it says God's going to be what? Our what? Director. Our father. I'm his child. Now, on page 63 is the third step, contract with God. Did anybody get that contract yet? I have new people writing the book. It says, this is God's job. He's going to give you everything you need. Now, what is that? Now, that's what it says. Everything you need. That's a good deal, isn't it? What's your job? Stay close to him and do his work well. Well, how do I do that? That's what the rest of the steps are. How do I stay close to God and do his work well all the time? And then I get everything I need. And then there's a bonus. God gets worry. It's not my job to worry anymore. Do you understand that, what a gift that is? So God's going to give me everything I need, and he can worry. I don't have to worry. All my job is to stay close to him and do his work well. And then we have the third step promises on page 63. And they say we're reborn. We have a whole new attitude on life. We change the way we see things. Our fear drifts away. Anybody want that? And then we have the third step prayer. Anybody like it? Good. Saying the third step prayer won't do crap if you don't follow through with the rest of the steps. It's a good prayer. I say it all the time, but then I have to do the steps. Does this make sense? If you make a decision to come to the meeting tonight, but you're home watching the rest of the Chiefs game, the decision didn't do you any good, did it? You have to follow through. The third step prayer will work if followed by action. What does the book say? This is a crucial and vital step, important for your life. It's very important to make that decision. And you have to make it the rest of your life all the time. But it has to be followed by a vigorous course of action to do what? Face and be rid of the things blocking you from God. If you don't face and be rid of them, they're going to be there and you're blocked from the power. That's called the fourth step, which is misunderstood. The fourth step says your self is self-centered. What does a life look like that's selfish, self-centered? Let's inventory it. Let's look at your personality. Let's look at a self-centered life. And we only look at three things: anger, fear, and our harmful conduct, especially in sex relationships. And we look at resentment. Why? It's the number one offender. It blocks us from God. When we harbor our anger and our resentments, we block from the sunlight of the Spirit. It kills us. They threaten your life several times on the next few pages. So if you don't want to go on, stop on 59. Because they're going to threaten your life three or four times. And it's true. This is a fatal disease. And then we look at resentments. We look at why we had them. We wrote them down. Anybody incapable of writing down your anger, the people you were angry at? Stop at 200. If you look at your whole life, there are so many people who bothered you in elementary school, the teachers, the other kids, you know, it's on and on. Grady's laughing. He wasn't ready to do his fourth step because he works and he has a cleaning business, and he had to find out all of his ex-employees, right, to get all their names to make sure he had them all down. But, you know, he's just like me. There's so many people. So we look at anger. And then we look at fear. And then we look at our harmful conduct. And then we learn prayers for fear. God, remove my fear and direct attention to how I should be. So we use that whenever we're afraid. God, remove my anger. And we have four prayers on page 66 and 67 to be free from anger. I suggest people read them. I had a guy, he had 7 years. He had resentments. He wanted to do a fourth step. So he gives me this resentment, and he writes why, and then he says, yeah, I was threatened. I said, what do you do now? He says, well, I don't know. I said, well, it's in the book. Anybody want to be free from anger? Page 66, it says, this was our course. This is what we did. We look when people are spiritually ill. We don't like the way they treat us, but I was ill too. God, give me love, patience, and tolerance for them. God, how can I be helpful for them? God, save me from being angry at them. And God, give me a kind and tolerant view of them. Now, other people tell me they pray for them. I don't need to pray for them. I need to pray for me to be removed from my anger, me to change the way I see them. If I'm praying for them, then I feel like I'm still, you know, I've got some power. There's something wrong with them that's wrong with me. And then it says, and then we have we look at our mistakes. We look at why I have resentments. Why do we have resentment? Because we're self-centered. We don't like the way they are. We're not kind and loving. We're not considerate. We're intolerant, judgmental. Anybody else have that? And then we use that information for steps 6 and 7 to look at our character. The same thing, do the same thing with fear. Then we're supposed to do a sex inventory, which nobody wants to do, but it's on pages 69 and 70. You look at all your relationships. You look at where you were selfish, dishonest, where you rose jealousy, where you were inconsiderate. Look at how you use people in relationships. They're not talking about the sex acts per se. They're talking about how we use people to feel good about ourselves, how we manipulated them, how harmful we were to people. Then you take all that information and you do step 5. When I work with somebody, we do it at the time. We go through it, like with the book. And when you do step 5, it says that you now are beginning to have a relationship with your Creator. Guess what? You're starting to have a power in your life. You have prayers. He's removed all your anger and all your fear. You've forgiven everybody that you were angry at, and you've also now got a list of everybody you harmed. And you're willing to make amends because you want to make it right. What a change in attitude. That's step 4 and 5. Then step 6 and 7 is where you take this character that you have and you want to be willing to change it. You don't want to be that person anymore. And then you humbly ask God to remove all those shortcomings. What are you short of? God's character. We have our checklist. Jimmy did a good imitation last night. You're either on the left-hand side or the right-hand side. The left-hand side is the characteristic of God. The left-hand side is the characteristic of self, God. Now, 6 and 7, you do the rest of your life. You learn to recognize whenever you're in self, whenever your self-centered character is arising, and how do you know that? You're angry, you're afraid, or you're disturbed. And then you stop and you say, God, I don't want to be this way. I want to be loving, kind, and tolerant. And you want to remove whatever character defect is causing the problem at the time. Sometimes you don't know. Just say, God, remove whatever it is. It's the left-hand side. And make me kind and loving and tolerant. And it'll work all the time. You do 6 and 7 the rest of your life. Why? Because we never get rid of our self-centeredness. We're treating it with the steps so that we can allow God to work. God's here. I wake up in the morning, I ask God to direct my life. Anybody else do that? Good. Then I start running the show. And then I have to watch for when I'm running the show so I could stop and let God run the show. And that's it. All right, steps 8 and 9. 8 is where you're willing to make amends to those you've harmed. Why are you willing to do that? Because you don't want to be afraid of them anymore. You lose your fear of people in step 8 and 9 in the world because you're willing to make amends to everybody that you've harmed except when to do so would injure them or others. Now, you can't do 8 and 9 till you know how you harm them. I've seen a lot of people 1 week, they're making amends, they're not going well, people are upset, and they don't think the program works. 8 and 9 require work of 1 through 7. When you get to 8, you're willing, if you're not willing to make amends, then you need to go back and do your 4th step on that person again and forgive them and see the truth about it. Then 9 is where you do so unless to harm yourself or others. There's instructions on that. They're pages 76 to 83. They go in detail. And so then you get to the 9-step promises that are read at a lot of meetings. Now, they're promises for every step. People like those because they're 12-step promises. And we chant. We do like the chant here at AA. And we chant, are these extravagant promises? We think not. Oh. Well, they are great promises. They are. They're great. But you got to work for them. We trivialize them. Then the other problem with the 9-step promises is you can lose them when you get back in the self. It's a continuous thing. You'll know when you're with God because the promises are coming true, and you know when you're not, they're not coming true. And so then it takes you to the world of the Spirit. And remember, the promises tell you suddenly you realize God is doing for you what you cannot do for yourself. You realize that there's a power in your life that you can trust and go to. And it says, then you've entered the world of the Spirit, page 84. The world of the Spirit is a good place. I suggest you try to get there. Now, the book says we need to not only get there, we need to stay there. Now, step 10 doesn't say anything about the world of the spirit, does it? It says something about continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, properly admit it. So I hear people say, well, whenever I'm wrong, I go around and admit it. That's not what the step's about. That's good to do if you're wrong, but make sure you're wrong and how you were wrong before you admit it. What the step says to me is you continue to look at your thinking all day long, and whenever it's mistaken, you ask God to remove it and change it. Does that make sense? Yeah. And then you can, it says, you watch for selfishness, society, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, you ask God at once to remove them. You discuss it with another person if you have to. You make amends. You then direct your attention, turn your thoughts to someone you can help. One paragraph tells you how to live in the world of the spirit. I know a lot of people have been in AA a long time, never read that paragraph. If you write it out and you just follow those instructions all day, your life will get better. Then we have the recovered promises on 84 and 85. Tells you how you react if you're in fit spiritual condition. How do you react when you're in fit spiritual condition? Better than you did before. You react normally to alcohol. You're not fighting everybody and everything. It's great. But there's a warning. If you're not in fit spiritual condition, watch out. And so the next paragraph says you have a daily reprieve based on your spiritual condition. And you have to maintain a fit spiritual condition. And it says, there's a must in there. I must carry a vision of God's will in all my activities. His will, not mine, be done. Anybody think that's good? What is God's will in all your activities? What's a vision of it? So you could do the St. Francis prayer. You could do love and tolerance. They say that's our code. I do love, patience, kindness, tolerance, consideration, compassion. But it's the characteristics of God. How does God want me to be? Now, that's the other thing. People are always talking about what they're going to do. But AA talks about how you be. If you be loving and tolerant, your actions will follow. So we want to be the person God created in my mind. Be those characteristics, and then my actions will follow. And then we get to step 11, which is how we stay in conscious contact with God and improve it all the time through prayer and medication. No, excuse me. No, sorry. Meditation. There are two pages that tell you how to live. And do the first thing you do is you inventory your life at night, how your life was run on self-will. You look at wherever you were selfish, dishonest, and considered afraid. You ask yourself, were you kind and loving? No, of course not. You ask yourself what you could have done better. You ask God's forgiveness and what corrective actions. You can have that paragraph next to your bed and read it at night before you go to bed and meditate on it. It'll make your life better. Then it says when you wake up in the morning, stop. Before you start thinking about yourself, stop and ask God to direct your thinking, divorcing it from selfish, dishonest, self-seeking motives. Is that unclear? It says, you'll think of your plans for the day, and then they say, stop, and say the prayer. Then it says, you're going to meditate whenever you face indecision during the day, and you're going to ask, when that happens, to let God direct your thinking. Then you're going to ask God throughout the day to show you the next right action and give you the power to carry that out. Have you ever been to a meeting and heard the next right thing? Well, I did the next right thing a lot, and I got a wristband. Because that's what I thought was the right thing. But I need to do the next right thing that God wants me to do. It all starts with God, and then do that. And if I haven't worked the steps, I don't have a relationship with God, I don't know what it is. Then there's the powerful, this is where you end the 11th step. It says, when we're agitated or doubtful, we pause. Now, agitated or doubtful means you're disturbed, you're angry, you're fearful, you're back in self. You pause. Why do you want to pause? Because you want to allow God in. You pause, and then you ask God for the right thought or action. If you don't pause, there's no God there. It's the serenity prayer in the big book. God, give me the serenity to know what to change and what to accept, what to do. And then it says we're much less danger of what? Foolishness? Foolish actions, being angry, fearful, causing harm to others. And it said, we realize we have to stop running the show. And then it says, thy will not mine be done. And then that ends step 11. And it says, this is how God disciplines us. And then it says, faith without works is dead. What does that mean? It means if you've done the deal and you have a relationship with God and you want to keep the relationship going, you have to continue to do the work or your faith is dead. It's different than the New Testament faith without works is dead. It's a little different. We have to keep the relationship with God going by getting out of self all the time. So if I'm not getting out of myself all the time, then I don't have a relationship with God and He can't direct my life. It's a little bit different in the scripture, and I've studied that. But the way I see it in AA, the reason I put it in here is you can't have true faith in a relationship with God if you're not doing the work to stay close to Him and allow Him to work. And if you're doing God's work, then you're in relationship with Him. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
And so if you do that, you'll be okay. Then the last chapter, and I'll shut up now, is step 12. Which people think is going to treatment centers or things. Step 12 is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. That's why you do the 12 steps, so you have the spiritual relationship. And then it says, you carry this message to others. And we went through that in great detail. And then here's one that's not talked about. Practice the principles in all your affairs. Practice the spiritual principles in all your affairs. And then if you do that, then you'll stay in contact with God, you'll have faith, you'll have the works, and you'll have a life of peace and serenity. So I took 36 minutes on that, so they're going to be mad, but I'm going to stop right there. Thank you.
Thanks.